Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Weaver syndrome is a rare condition that causes rapid growth and predisposes you to cancer. And it has long puzzled scientists. But new research coming out of Trinity has just revealed groundbreaking findings about how genetic mutations drive the condition. So what does it mean for understanding Weaver syndrome and a whole host of genetic disorders? Well, Adrian Bracken is a professor of chromatin biology at the Smurfit Institute of Genetics at Trinity College Dublin. He joins me now. What is chromatin biology, Adrian?
All right, great question. Some people like to call it epigenetics or the study of epigenetics. I have a few issues with that term because it means a few different things to different people. So I suppose what is chromatin biology? It is the study of proteins and DNA. So, you know, you might not know this, but we all know we have DNA inside our cells. But actually, it's not just floating around as DNA. There are proteins that are bound to the DNA. And so collectively, the proteins and the DNA is called chromatin. So the study of that biology is called chromatin biology. And as I said, you could call it epigenetics if you're so inclined.
Right. And so essentially the study of how genes get expressed and how they get turned on or turned off or turned up or turned down.
Exactly that. And I suppose the most interesting or maybe even relatable context of that would be memory, cellular memory. So how does like a brain cell remember to be a brain cell, blood cell remember to be a blood cell? Of course, you would intuitively imagine the blood cell is not expressing or genes that are involved in being a brain and vice versa. And so chromatin biology or epigenetics is really important in terms of keeping the right genes on and keeping the wrong genes off.
Yeah. Kind of like having the faders, because of course inside every cell that we have almost is a copy of DNA that can make any cell. So it's actually how the piano is played. So Weaver syndrome, what exactly is it?
Yeah, it's a rare syndrome, you know, less than 100 people so far in the world. First reported by Weaver, a doctor in 1974. And people.
Wow, 1974 is very late to be naming a disease, isn't it?
Well, yeah, so most diseases or syndromes or many diseases and syndromes are called after the scientist or doctor who discovers them. Mm. That particular doctor was around in 1974. Now, the genetics of it was done in 2011, which I'll get to. But I guess Weaver, he noticed that some children had, rapid growth, and these children grew into adults who were really tall. I mean, very, very tall.
Like how tall?
Well, the tallest woman in the world right now has Weaver syndrome. And she's over 2 meters. She's way over 2 meters. She might be 2 meters 15. In feet, she's over 7 feet. She's almost 7 foot one.
For anybody is very,
that's
very tall.
Oh,
yeah. I've met one person who was seven foot tall, and it was quite the experience. Yeah.
Right. So she is the tallest, Guinness Book of Records, tallest living woman on Earth at the moment.
And
she has Weaver syndrome.
This syndrome always leads to large individuals, or can it work the other way?
That's interesting. Yeah, so yes, it only leads to taller people, but like very tall people. However, in 2011, when they identified the gene, which my lab studies, EZH2, that is associated with Weaver syndrome, after that, they discovered that a very small child, like a very small child, had a mutation in the same gene, which puzzled people a lot. This was 5 years ago now, where these doctors reported a child, 6-year-old girl, who was, I think it was 9 kilograms, which is about the average weight of a 1-year-old.
Right.
So really small.
And how old was the girl?
She was 6 at the time.
Wow.
So if she's still alive, I imagine she is, she'd be, I guess, 11 or more.
Wow.
So, you know, if you've children, you'll know about percentiles and so on. So if you get to 9 kilograms compared to, you know, the average, you're way out there. There might be one person like that in Ireland.
And so is this always pathological? I mean, is it a bad thing to be 7 foot tall for Weaver syndrome? Does it affect them in other ways?
Yeah, you know, you could talk to some of the rugby players, you know, the locks, and, you know, they're perfectly healthy people. And actually, you know, Weaver syndrome per se, it's not necessarily going to shorten your life, although I guess we'll come to it, it is going to predispose you to cancer.
Right.
But, you know, the tallest woman in the world right now, she's a web developer, and she speaks about her syndrome a lot. And, you know, she comes across absolutely fine. And
I kind of am disappointed to hear that she's a web developer. I kind of feel like she should be doing something with that height. Like, right. I don't know, like, you know, stacking shelves or...
You know, well, it does come with, I suppose, with some disabilities. You know, imagine being 7'1" and trying to get on an airplane. So actually, when she wants to travel around, they have to take out a few seats for her.
Oh, did they actually do that?
Wow. Yeah. And there are some other associated issues, you know, with back problems and so on. So she has to lie down quite a bit. But
right. But so you said your lab studies this gene. I mean, presumably it studies a few genes or could you dedicate an entire lab just to studying one gene?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, one of the most famous genes, if you're talking about genetics, might be the P53 gene. You know, it's very much the most mutated gene in human cancer. And, you know, labs have spent 40 years studying that gene, or 30 years at least. And, you know, thousands of people are studying that gene. So, yeah, it's not unusual to obsess about a gene, and maybe scientists tend to obsess about things. But there are a lot of other genes that are related to EZH2 function that we also study.
So, you know, when we talk about uncontrolled growth, as you see in people who have Weaver syndrome, whenever I hear about, you know, growth like that, I think about cancer. And your work shows a link between cancer and this cell through this gene?
Yeah, so I suppose I should say that we're scientists and we're not doctors. And so we don't actually per se deal or meet people who have cancer or even indeed Weaver syndrome. We're more interested in the genetics and the mechanisms and so on. So I suppose what I could say is that, you know, when you look at the literature, you know, papers published by doctors who interact with individuals with Weaver syndrome, there is a strong predisposition to have cancer. And many of the individuals who have been sequenced, you know, their DNA sequenced since 2011, they're actually young people. So, you know, you'd be concerned that they are possibly going to get cancer, very much more likely to get cancer based on the evidence so far. And that's one piece of information. But the other one is that, I suppose, one of the other reasons we study EZH2 is that it's a so-called oncogene. It's a gene that causes cancer.
Right.
It's an oncogene in lymphoma. Its function, because of a particular mutation, its function is activated or increased, and that causes a type of lymphoma. And there's drugs that inhibit its function that are FDA approved in the clinic.
And so this particular gene, how it's expressed, the mutations of the gene, that has a big effect on whether or not someone is likely to have a cancer.
How it's expressed, less so.
Right.
I could get into that, but there's a lot of long story on that. Rather, the mutation.
Right. So what version of this gene people have can really affect whether or not they're likely to have certain types of a cancer like lymphoma, right?
Yes, but I'd add to that, this the interesting thing, perhaps related to this, you know, really small and really tall people, is that other types of mutations in EZH2 cause a different type of cancer called leukemia. But those mutations don't increase its function. They absolutely obliterate its function.
Right.
So even in the cancer context, if you forget about Weaver syndrome, if you just think about cancer, some cancers have increases in its function, some have decreases. And that's all genetics. And that's puzzled doctors and scientists as well. So it's both in cancer and in human growth.
By understanding Weaver syndrome, can we do anything to understand the development of cancer? Is there anything that we might be able to learn from this syndrome, this gene and cancer?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in our paper last week, we had one really interesting finding that we really want to work on and we think has huge relevance for cancer and understanding how mutations in EZH2 are causing cancer and perhaps even how you can treat those cancers.
Right.
And that finding was that so we modeled the Weaver syndrome. I should say this work was all done by a former PhD student in my lab, Orla Devi. And she also worked in Dr. Eric Conway's lab in UCD finishing this project. So I have to say that. But what she did was she studied these particular variants of EZH2 that occur in Weaver syndrome. And what she found in the end was that they lead to increased levels of other genes that are associated with growth. So you might think that's not surprising. So, you know, you have mutations in EZH2 and that's leading to higher levels of genes that are associated with growth.
Because often you have this sort of pathway of genes that one gene performs in a particular way, and that then leads on to different types of activity in different genes, right? That a lot of the genes that we have, they're interlinked, and they're almost in some ways like a a series of dominoes sometimes.
Exactly that. So I suppose to try and explain it, EZH2 is a gene that turns off other genes normally. And the Weaver mutations in EZH2, we showed, caused it to be less good at turning off those genes. And those genes are genes that cause you to be big. But the cool thing was that the other mutation that occurred in the person, the girl who was tiny, those mutations did the opposite. So they massively increased the function of EZH2 and led to those growth genes that I mentioned. They go massively down. So we can kind of explain.
So there's a genetic target in this particular gene that if you could replace that gene with a healthy version, you're less likely to have cancer and less likely to have these follow-on genes activated.
Well, yes, yeah, certainly, you know, there's FDA-approved drugs to block EZH function, and that's good for you. Well, it's good for those treating cancers that have gained a function of EZH2, but you're a bit in trouble if the cause of the cancer is loss of function of a gene, in this case, EZH2. What are you going to do? You can't make a drug for something that's not there.
Right.
But our work has just shown that the loss of the function of EZH2 in cells that are modeling this very small person, we see higher levels of particular genes, growth-associated genes, for which there are drugs for. So, you know, put bluntly, we'd predict that, unfortunately, that person is very likely predisposed to cancer. But more broadly, there, as I mentioned earlier on, leukemias have loss of function of EZH2. And we're predicting in the paper that in those cancers, these other growth-associated genes are going to be higher. And there are readily available FDA-approved drugs for those factors. So we would propose trying to target those cancers with those drugs. So that's the cancer impact in a way.
Right. Okay. So a potential clinical impact there by understanding this relationship and this very rare disease. Very interesting. When it comes to a genetic allele, a version of this gene that can have such a drastic effect on a patient as to cause a cancer or a high predisposition to cancer, how easy is it to treat that with a genetic modification? We're miles away from being able to do that right now, right?
By genetic modification, do you mean
replacing the gene with a more healthy version of a gene in a child, for example, or an adult? Theoretically, I guess you could do it in the egg, right? But once the baby's born, you have a child. Is it possible to fix those genes in that way?
Well, I think what you just said there is theoretically. I'm speaking now. Yeah. Would be the right way to do it. In that, when you think about it, EZH2 is vital for development, human development, which of course starts in the womb. And, you know, these kids with Weaver syndrome are already very big when they're born. So, you know, if you had the notion that, oh, I'll fix the EZH2 gene in all cells in that child or in that adult, you know, the horse is bolted. You'd want to be fixing it, you know, at the zygote stage. So, you know, with the fertilized egg, essentially, in my view. All of that being theoretical.
Theoretical, yeah, I guess. And I suppose there are so many genetic conditions that you can screen, for. In the future, you may have a Gattaca situation where you can figure all these things out. Yeah. But for the moment, we're still looking at the research. So really interesting speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time. Professor Adrian Bracken is from the Smurfit Institute of Genetics at TCT.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.